Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Perception Management. You're listening to Keith Rogers here in Western Montana. We had 9 inches of fresh snow yesterday, and it was 14 degrees last night for a low. It's already back down to 26. Spring is trying to launch. The birds sound beautiful here. There's good news somewhere. Anyway, the phone lines will be open. However, I'm going to ask that if anyone calls in, to please stick to the subject tonight. Phone number is 512-337-9443. Again, that's 512-337-9443. Anyway, with that, I'm going to take you back a little bit and show you how corrupt things are.
Generally, a lot of people would say you reap what you sow. So how do we fix self-radicalized lone wolves domestically?
Well, we've got to identify the people who are most likely to be radicalized. We've got to cut this off at the beginning. There are always a certain number of young people who are alienated. They don't get a job. They lost a girlfriend. Their family doesn't feel happy here. Mm-hmm. And we can watch the signs of that. And there are members of the community who will reach out to those people and bring them back in and encourage them to look at their blessings here. But I do think on a national policy level, we need to look at what self-radicalization means, because we are at war with this group of terrorists. They do have an ideology. In World War II, if someone supported Nazi Germany at the expense of the United States, we didn't say that was freedom of speech. We put him in a camp. They were prisoners of war. So if these people are radicalized and they don't support the United States and they're disloyal to the United States as a matter of principle, fine, that's their right. It's our right and our obligation to segregate them from the normal community for the duration of the conflict. And I think we're going to have to increasingly get tough on this, not only in the United States, but our allied nations like Britain and Germany and France are going to have to look at their domestic law procedures.
General Wesley Clark, as always, great to see you, sir. Thanks for your time, and I want to pass along to our viewers.
All right, there was Wesley Clark. He was notorious in 2002 under the video of 7 countries in 5 years, all based on total lies. Again, though, if you don't back the agenda, you are the terrorist. Tonight's show is about the FISA courts and spying on Americans. I know you're only supposed to worry about it when, say, the president has been spied on. Boo-hoo. When you build a police state and you usurp the powers of the people that give their government the power to govern them, crap happens, right? All this spying built on lies of 9/11, fictional enemies, and an FBI who is admittedly behind all acts of domestic terrorism. And you can read that in the New York Times and also the Guardian newspaper. Now, I'm going to play a video here for you. And I want to show you how this whole system works to keep Americans totally in suspense. If it isn't a virus, it's got to be a terrorist, right? So Bear with me. I'm hoping that video goes because I had a problem starting it earlier.
Four Arabs are accused of providing support for attacks against American targets.
The Justice Department says the four were part of a sleeper operational combat cell.
It was the first major trial in the new war on terror.
Prosecutors say the men belong to the Algerian terrorist group Salafia.
A sleeper operational combat cell in a global jihad against Israel and America.
Two of the men were found guilty in June of terrorism-related charges.
But were these men really part of a sleeper cell or victims of overzealous prosecution?
This case was a clear violation of the law. I should not be arrested for terrorism at all.
Six days after the 9/11 attacks, FBI agents approached a house in Detroit looking for a suspected terrorist, Nabil Al-Marab.
I heard knocking on the doors and somebody calling Nabil. I went down, opened the door and see what's going on. One of the agents asked me, are you Nabil? I'm like, no, I'm not Nabil. Do you know Nabil? And he showed me a picture through the translator. I'm like, no, I don't know this guy. And he looked like he doesn't believe me.
The man the FBI was looking for didn't live there anymore, but FBI agents searched the house and found false identification papers and old Detroit airport badges that Kubriti said he and one of his roommates used when they were dishwashers there.
They were on the table, and when the FBI saw the IDs saying Metro Airport, and there you go, they have a nice case.
Kubriti and his roommates were arrested for possessing false documents. But federal prosecutors began to pursue more than just a document fraud case.
We found a book which had a series of sketches. They were supposedly showing a plan to attack an American airbase in Turkey and also perhaps to attack a hospital. The military said they altered their flight patterns based on these drawings, and people in the CIA gave some credibility to these drawings, and I deferred to their expertise.
Attorney General John Ashcroft hailed the case as a major coup in the war on terror.
Three Michigan men suspected of having knowledge of the September 11th attacks, for example, were arrested on charges of possessing false documents.
Now you have the Attorney General mentioning it, and I think that made the case a bigger issue in D.C. than it had been before that.
New indications tonight that the worldwide web of terror stretches far beyond Afghanistan.
These men in Detroit are described as a terrorist sleeper cell.
In the apartment, the FBI says, were rough plans to target a U.S. airbase in Turkey and the hospital in Amman, Jordan.
It was the first case that included terrorism charges to be brought after September 11th. This is the one case, I think, that is firmly in the shadow of September 11th.
Among the evidence, this videotape of young Arabic men and women in high-profile tourist destinations, which the Justice Department claimed were terrorist casing videos. The prosecution also had evidence that Kubriti planned to get a commercial license to drive hazardous materials and suggested he and the others were providing support for terrorist attacks. All circumstantial evidence until this man came to the government's attention, Youssef Mimsa, whose false documents had been found during the Detroit raid, was arrested on charges of credit card and ID fraud. He cut a deal with the prosecution, agreeing to testify against Kubriti and the others.
Mimsa said that he knew these people. He identified them as potential terrorists. He said they had discussed terrorist activities. So without Mimsa, I don't think there would have been a prosecution.
Such cooperation is a critical tool in our war against terrorism.
The government star witness, Youssef Mimsa, says the four talked about terrorism.
As the trial started, the nation was watching as one of the government's most important post-9/11 terrorism cases was laid out before a jury.
A conviction would be a milestone in the war on terror.
One of the things we were all concerned about was the white-hot publicity. There were death threats, which I've never talked about publicly. We were busing in jurors from a remote location, and we received a threat indicating that the person on the phone had discovered the location and had planted a bomb. you know, needless to say, that was concerning.
The trial lasted more than 2 months.
In Detroit tonight, closing arguments have ended and a jury is set to deliberate the first case against an alleged terror cell inside the U.S. since the September 11th terrorist attacks.
Originally, the Justice Department linked the four to September 11th and Al-Qaeda. It later retracted that. A jury hearing closing arguments now will decide whether the four are terrorists or, as their lawyers claim, targets of an anxious government.
On June 3, 2003, the jury found Kubriti and El Marduti guilty of the most serious charge, providing material support to terrorists, while acquitting Ali Haimoud and convicting Hanan of only document fraud.
In Detroit, two Arab immigrants have been found guilty of terror, conspiracy, and fraud.
The government is lying, clearly lying, and the jury decided to come back with guilty verdict. I was angry at the jury, very angry at those 12 American people who decided that I was guilty on terrorism.
As the judge was preparing to hand down his sentence, he got some disturbing information.
The U.S. attorney said, "Judge, I have to come and see you. I've already talked to the defense lawyers about this, but I have a pretty serious matter to raise with you." I said, "What's the nature of it?"
Judge Rosen was eventually given page after page of documents that the lead prosecutor, Rick Convertino, never handed over to the defense. Among them, this letter from a drug kingpin named Milton Butch Jones, whose prison cell was next to the prosecution's star witness, Yousef Mimsa.
And I read it, and it was pretty shocking.
In it, Jones says Mimsa boasted how he lied to the FBI, how he fooled the Secret Service agent on his case.
This was before anything about what Mimsa was going to say was public. He had so much detail about what Mimsa later did testify to that he could only have gotten that information at the time from Mimsa.
Corbett, who is Convertino's supervisor, defends the decision not to turn Jones's letter over to the defense.
Butch Jones, here's a guy looking at a murder charge. Mr. Jones, aren't you trying to say anything you can to bail yourself out? I don't think he would have been a credible witness. I said, I don't think we have to turn it over.
There's a basic rule of American justice. If the prosecution has evidence the accused is innocent or might be innocent, it must give the accused that evidence. The government broke that rule.
Another issue involved those alleged casing videos, which Kubriti says were filmed by one of his house guests.
They were taking pictures everywhere they went, New York, Vegas, and there's girls dancing, guys talking.
The Las Vegas FBI office not only had not bought into the government's theory that this was a casing tape, a surveillance tape, but had specifically said, no, it's not.
But those doubts were also not revealed to the defense. That left a key piece of evidence, the drawings in the day planner that allegedly showed plans to bomb military sites in the Middle East, which the defense said were scribblings left behind by a former tenant.
If you would have taken that day planner before 9/11 to the FBI and tell them, hey, look at this. They're going to tell you, take that day planner and get out of here. This is garbage. What is this? But after 9/11, it looks like it's something.
Some military experts had also expressed doubts about the drawings. A high-ranking Turkish intelligence official had told the U.S. military that he was skeptical that the day planner sketches had been drawn by terrorists surveilling Incirlik Air Base and called them extremely amateurish. To get to the bottom of the case, Judge Rosen reached out directly to the CIA for the case file.
And they said, well, it's classified at such a level that we can't even permit it to leave the agency. So I said, well, okay, I'll go out there and look at it. And they looked at me like I had said, well, I'm going to go to the moon or something.
In the spring of 2004, Judge Rosen did go to CIA headquarters in Langley, Virginia, and reviewed the classified material related to the case. In agreement with the Justice Department's recommendation, he threw out the terrorism convictions.
It's never easy to overturn a verdict, but it became obvious to me at some point that the verdicts had to be overturned.
There's been a setback tonight in the war on terror.
A federal judge has tossed out terrorism charges against two men convicted last year.
The Justice Department admitted that its prosecutors seriously mishandled the case. This was the first major federal terror prosecution after 9/11.
Four Arabs are accused of...
That's good. All right. Where am I going with this? Well, officials warn against letting surveillance powers expire as a FISA bill starts in the Senate. Stalls in the Senate. This is in Washington from Sinclair Broadcasting Group. Three surveillance powers that the U.S. officials say is vital to national security may expire Sunday night tonight after the Senate Republicans backed off plans to vote on the reauthorization bill under the apparent veto threat from President Donald Trump. Now, there are plenty of videos out here of Senate testimony of the FBI using countless millions of dollars, tax dollars, to frame people to keep these wars on terror going. After all, you have to go after them evil Muslims. So, I've tried to highlight on this show, Perception Management, that all governments actually hate democracy. This show tonight will take you back to yesteryear to show you how the control of this government has been for decades. I'm going to start first here with 19 facts on the IRS targeting President Obama's, or from, you know, Obama there, who they can't blame on Republicans, but I won't have time to read all of them. I'll just read a couple here. In January 2010, the Supreme Court in Citizens United held it unconstitutional to ban free speech by corporations, unions, and other organizations. In August 2010, the IRS distributed a BOLO, Be on the Lookout alert, for the Tea Party organizations applying for tax-exempt status. On May 10, 2013, during a bar meeting, Mrs. Lerner admits targeting, calling it absolutely incorrect, insensitive, and inappropriate. 4 days later, on May 14, 2013, the Inspector General issued a report confirming the targeting. And then on June 12, 2013, the IRS finally suspends the BOLO list for the Tea Party names. On February 3, 2014, President Obama tells Fox News there's not a smidgen of corruption at the IRS. On September 22, 2014, Mrs. Lerner breaks silence to Politico and says that she's the victim. However, in November and December of 2014, the Inspector General recovers 30,000 backed-up Lois Lerner emails. Where is the outrage? Have Americans got so weak they refuse to fight back? Well, there's a few. There's also a few foreigners, too, like Julian Assange, Bradley Manning when he had a set between his legs, and of course now she has been released from prison. We have Edward Snowden. We have all those ex-CIA, ex-FBI agents that have finally come forward and said there's something wrong with this government. Where's your outrage? However, I'm going to take you back a little bit further on this. With this coronavirus deal, your government is locking down this country. While others, like in France right now, are defying the bans of public gatherings and more, fear is the new order of the day. Everything is shutting down. This is more about global financial meltdown than a virus. After all, millions across this planet were killed all in your names. They didn't shut the countries down for their known millions of deaths, did they? Or the known war crimes committed either. Anyone could go and listen to the Pentagon papers here on Afghan. 100,000 people in Afghan, civilians killed. Okay, 38,000 insurgents protecting their country from what? The illegal occupation? And now they're bombing in Iraq? And they want to bomb Iran still? Do you realize this is all in your name? And remember, as Wesley Clark said, if you don't go along with this, you're the terrorist. You are the one that should be interned because you're not going along with U.S. policy. So here's a story of Americans that did fight the system and won. And though I don't advocate crime, there is a point where we as Americans must take back our country from the elite who send your sons and daughters to wars based on total lies, who kill millions of others in our names. This video that Kenneth is going to shortly play here is called The Greatest Heist You've Never Heard Of. It's from the New York Times. It's 18 minutes, and I'm going to have to go through the end of the bottom of the hour here. Don't know if I'll have time for callers here, but I want you to see exactly what has gone on and what people do to expose crime. And that's it. Why aren't we out here exposing crime? These guys should be in jail if we had judicial law in this country. So with that, Kenneth, would you please play that video?
It's the greatest heist you've never heard of, and one of the most important.
Last March, someone broke into the FBI offices in Media, Pennsylvania, stole some records, and mailed copies of them around to several newspapers.
Those records would help bring an end to J. Edgar Hoover's secret activities within the Federal Bureau of Investigation.
He ordered his agents not only to expose new left groups, but to take action against them to neutralize them.
Many Americans were tapped and bugged, had their mail opened by the CIA and the FBI.
The burglars were never caught, and the details have remained a mystery until now. A new book, The Burglary, reveals for the first time who did it and how they used a crowbar to pry open one of the best-kept and darkest secrets in American history.
We were early whistleblowers before whistleblowers were known as such.
The burglars are stepping out of the shadows just as new revelations about secret intelligence operations have many people asking, how much is too much when personal privacy is at stake? In the spring of 1970, the war in Vietnam was raging.
American battle deaths in Vietnam now number 40,142.
And at home, anti-war protesters and law enforcement officers were violently clashing.
It felt like a nightmare was unfolding. I took what was outrage and horror about what was going on, and I realized that I had to take it somewhere.
Bonnie Raines worked at a daycare center in Philadelphia. Her husband John taught religion at Temple University. They were the very picture of a golden couple.
We had an 8-year-old, a 6-year-old, and a 2-year-old. We were family folks who also wanted to keep another track active in our lives, which was political activism.
That activism attracted the attention of the FBI. Its director, the powerful and feared J. Edgar Hoover, perceived the anti-war movement, which ranged from radical revolutionaries to peaceful protesters, as a threat to national security.
At one rally, I had one of my children on my back, and not only did they take my picture, but they took her picture.
Protesters like the Raines became increasingly convinced the FBI was conducting a covert campaign against them, tapping their phones and infiltrating anti-war groups.
We knew the FBI was systematically trying to squash dissent, and dissent is the lifeblood of democracy.
Determined to get proof the FBI was crossing the line, fellow activist and Haverford physics professor William Davidon hatched a plan. He reached out to the Raines and 6 others, including a social worker, a graduate student, and a taxi driver named Keith Forsyth.
We agreed to meet someplace where we could talk. And he says, what would you think about the idea of breaking into an FBI office? And I look at him and I'm like, you're serious, aren't you? I was pretty vehement in my opposition to the war, and I felt like marching up and down the street with a sign was not cutting it anymore. And it was like, okay, time to kick it up a notch.
The crew decided to break into a small FBI field office in Media, Pennsylvania.
Once I got over the shock of thinking that this was the nuttiest thing I'd ever heard in my life, I'm like, this is a great idea, because we're not going to make any allegations. We're going to take their own paperwork signed by their own people, including J. Edgar Hoover, and give it to the newspapers. So let's see you argue with that.
In the Raines' third floor attic, the team divvied up responsibilities and assigned tasks. They hung maps to learn about the neighborhood, planned escape routes, and they took extensive notes on the comings and goings in the building.
I signed up for a correspondence course in locksmithing. That was my job, to get us in the door. Practice several times a week. After a month, you get pretty good.
Bonnie was assigned the job of going inside and casing the office.
I was to call the office and make an appointment as a Swarthmore student doing research on opportunities for women in the FBI. So they gave me an appointment. I tried to disguise myself as best I could, and I went to say goodbye, and I acted confused about where the door was, and that gave me a chance then to check out both rooms and know where the file cabinets were.
Bonnie discovered there was no alarm system and no security guards. She also found a second door leading inside.
when she came back with that news, we became convinced, yes, I think we can get this done. We had more to lose than anybody else in the group because we had these kids.
We faced the reality of if we were arrested and on trial, we would be in prison for very many years. We had to make some plans for that.
With a solid understanding of how they would conduct the break-in, they now needed to figure out when.
March 8, 1971, Fraser and Ali were fighting for the championship of the world. And we had the feeling that maybe the cops might be a little bit distracted.
While the crew waited at a nearby hotel, Forsythe arrived at the office alone.
Pull up, walk up to the door, and one of the locks is a cylinder tumbler lock, not a pin tumbler lock. And I just about had a heart attack. Bottom line is, I could not pick that lock.
They almost called it off, but that second door that Bonnie noticed gave them another chance.
At that point, you know that you're going to have to wing it. Knelt down on the floor, picked the lock in like 20 seconds. There was a deadbolt on the other side. I had a pry bar with me, a short curl bar. I put the bar in there and yanked that sucker. At one point, I heard a noise inside the office. And I'm like, are they in there waiting for me? Basically said to myself, there's only one way to find out. I'm going in.
Next, the inside crew walked into an empty office wearing business suits and carrying several suitcases. They cleaned out file cabinets and then made their way downstairs to the getaway car and drove off unnoticed. The group reconvened at a farmhouse an hour's drive away and started unpacking.
We were like, oh man, I can't believe this worked. We knew there was going to be some gold in there somewhere.
Each of the eight of us were sorting files, and all of a sudden, you'd hear one of them, oh, look at this one, look.
After several long nights digging for documents that looked the most revealing, the burglar sent copies to journalists, including Washington Post reporter Betty Metzger.
The cover letter was from the Citizens Commission to investigate the FBI, and the first file that I read was about a group of FBI agents who were told to enhance the paranoia in the anti-war movement and to create an atmosphere that there's an FBI agent behind every mailbox.
Attorney General John Mitchell asked the Post not to write about the stolen documents, saying it could endanger lives.
The Attorney General called two key editors and tried to convince them not to publish.
But the Post did publish the story on the front page. It was the first of several reports and told how agents turned local police, letter carriers, and switchboard operators into informants.
There were very strong editorials calling for an investigation of the FBI.
Another stolen document would prove even more explosive, a routing slip marked with a mysterious word, COINTELPRO. While reporters tried to uncover its meaning, the FBI was desperate to find the burglars. The Bureau put nearly 200 agents on the investigation. Hoover's best lead was the college girl who had visited their office.
His command was, find me that woman.
Agents actively searched for Bonnie, but there were many anti-war activists who fit her description.
We could hide within thousands of people. There were so many of us who were active.
The documents prove...
2 years later, NBC reporter Carl Stern figured out the meaning of that word, COINTELPRO.
Secret FBI memos made public today show that the late J. Edgar Hoover ordered a nationwide campaign to disrupt the activities of the New Left without telling any of his superiors about it.
Many of the techniques were clearly illegal. Burglaries, forged blackmail letters, and threats of violence were used.
The FBI initially defended its actions.
The government would have been derelict in its duty had it not taken measures to protect the fabric of our society.
But the Bureau's techniques were worse and the targets more far-reaching than the burglars ever imagined.
Diplomats, government employees, sports figures, socially prominent persons, senators, and congressmen.
The FBI at one time sought to blackmail the late Martin Luther King into committing suicide.
Marriages were destroyed. Violence was encouraged. Many Americans were tapped and bugged, had their mail opened by the CIA and the FBI, and their tax returns used illegally.
Congress issued a series of reforms. When William Webster took over the FBI in 1978, his mandate was clear.
My primary focus was making clear that COINTELPRO was no longer one of the arrows in the quiver of the FBI, that we were out of that business forever.
Webster admits the Bureau's tactics were out of bounds, but does not condone what the activists did to reveal them.
You can say the information might be useful, but the method is hardly justifiable. There's a way to take on the unjust law in the courts and deal with it in that way.
You know, there were things happening that were flat out wrong. Ordinary, how you treat your fellow man, wrong. And we took a risk to try to do what we could to put a stop to it.
The burglars were never caught. 5 years later, with the statute of limitations running out, the FBI closed the case, unsolved.
On the very last memo where they say who they think broke into the media office, they're down to 7 people. Only one was, in fact, one of the media burglars.
For nearly 20 years, Betty Metzger had no idea who the burglars were until one night, an old acquaintance she was having dinner with let it slip.
And our youngest daughter, Mary, was there. I said, Mary, you really ought to know Betty because she was the one that we sent all those documents to. And Betty's chin dropped like that.
I was absolutely stunned.
Metzger spent years tracking down the other burglars and getting them to reveal the secret they had vowed to keep forever. The mastermind, William Davidon, recently died, but he and 4 others are identified in Metzger's book, The Burglary, and in a new documentary, 1971, directed by Johanna Hamilton.
We didn't know this extraordinary story, this seemingly small event that actually had very far-reaching consequences.
The exposure of COINTELPRO pushed Congress to rein in government surveillance. It created a special court, the so-called FISA court, to issue warrants when intelligence agencies want to spy on U.S. citizens. But after 9/11, more wide-ranging surveillance was allowed. Just how much the NSA's spying activities had grown was largely unknown until 2013, when contractor Edward Snowden leaked classified documents.
This is the truth. This is what's happening. The public needs to decide whether these programs and policies are right or wrong.
The U.S. government reportedly attaining top secret court orders requiring Verizon to turn over the telephone records of millions of Americans to the National Security Agency.
Revelations about the government monitoring phone records and emails have renewed questions about the balance between privacy and security.
I definitely see parallels between Snowden's case and our case. What we revealed changed public opinion, which is why the laws were changed. If revealing ourselves is going to get people arguing with each other about what the FBI did then and what the NSA is doing now, I think that's a good thing.
All right. From there, we can hear that the guy that was involved in this is a major player, that he now advocates what the NSA and FBI is doing. This is how the propaganda works. You're either with us or you're against us. Phone lines are open, 512-337-9443, if you want to call in. Today, you now know why they are using facial recognition, why the real ID is being pushed, why those are falsely charged on terrorism and other related charges. You can also see the militarized police state, the no-knock raids, the civil forfeiture, everyone's a criminal, the arrest of anti-war activists, the free speech zones. When are you going to take back your country? It doesn't have to be a physical way, but you can sure in hell show up at these meetings that they have. You can disrupt them, even if it's standing up and turning your back to them. Let them know that we are on to them. I am so sick and tired of seeing young kids die, and I'm so sick and tired of watching young kids kill other kids in foreign lands to push an agenda, just like all this virus stuff. By effectively taking China out of the picture, they've killed the Belt Road. Italy, which was the first signer of that Belt Road Initiative, is now reeling with the death of their elderly. Iran also targeted that, where the U.S. is sanctioning Iran and they won't even allow medical supplies into Iran. Yet other countries are doing it. One of the most foremost things that these folks thought about in this video I just played was their future of their children. When I see those French movements over there in the yellow vest over in France who are defying the non-gathering laws, they should be holding up mirrors aimed back at the police to let them know that this is the country that they're going to have. Where's the resistance in America? It is a shame that this country has come to the point where no one has any guts whatsoever. And if you want to believe these stories of hijackers and box cutters, I mean, seriously, you can't tell me that one Texan or Montanan wasn't on board one of those planes and didn't do some Roy D. Mercer, good old 55-gallon drum ass whooping on him. A train rolling into the valley here. Anyway, the point here is we have a country here that is on its cusp of failure. The empire is dissolving, backed by decades of illegal wars, trillions of dollars in debt, people living on the streets, corporations not willing to pay a decent wage, unions shut down, 40 hours a week, 40 hours a week shut down. It's all part-time jobs, zero benefits. The corporate takeover is here, and I think that's what we're starting to see now, is the actual divvying up of the pie, I guess you could call it. The rich get richer, and the poor get poorer. Steve in New Mexico, good evening, sir.
Yeah, Mr. Bennett, I was just wondering if you saw, well, this was at about 3:30 Mountain Standard Time when the president come on. And I don't know if you saw his little speech that he gave. And what he had mentioned was that he talked to Kruger, you know, grocery store, Albertson, and others to make sure that our shelves would be full here. And then he brought up that. Okay. And then he brought up the Fed had dropped the interest rate down to zero. Mm-hmm. So.
I saw that part.
Yeah, so, yeah, you saw that part. Okay. I was just wondering if you were going to talk about it. So.
Well, what I will say this is I was watching Jimmy Dore with Tulsi Gabbard, and the Trump administration with the Democrats are working on a universal basic income right now for all Americans to receive, all adult Americans to receive $1,000 a month to stave off the so-called job losses and stuff like that, you know. I mean, if the bankers can get $1.5 trillion to bail them out again, and the deregulation that they're pushing for again, that it's only fair that Americans, and I know there's a lot of people out there would say, oh, but that's socialism or something like that, you know. But when are Americans going to get something out of this country from a government that does nothing for us other than lead us into these illegal wars, takes care of Israel with billions of dollars, and our people are dying in the streets?
Yeah, exactly. And that's what's been going on ever since the daggum after, what, World War II. We haven't been able to win a thing. Because they don't want us to win it. And let me go back, way back, to the kings and queens. Who did they use to fight their wars? The serfs. And that's what's going on today.
Steve, I've mentioned this. You think of all these, I mean, there was videos of the U.S. military down in Mexico with their nice big MRAP vehicles recruiting Mexicans to serve in America's wars, and then their family could earn their so-called citizenship by his military service. Well, that sounds all hunky-dory. But what they're doing is they're using the whites, the blacks, the Latinos, the Koreans and stuff that move here to the United States to go and kill the indigenous people of other lands.
Right. And if they think, that these people coming in here is going to be happy to them, it's not. Because sooner or later, these people are going to figure out, as soon as their incomes go down way long enough, how come all these guys are getting all this? And I'll guarantee you, It's going to happen. It's going to be Katie by the door.
And that's why we're seeing a rash of CEO retiring or taking off right now, because the ship is getting ready to sink and they're getting out. And you can bet they've got their damn little nest egg taken care of. Anyway, Steve, I got to run on here. I got a couple more calls, but I do thank you for coming.
Take care, and thank you very much. Yeah, thanks.
All right, my best to you. All right, Chance, my good friend over in West Virginia. Good evening, Chance.
Yes, hello, Keith. I hope you and the puppy are both doing good. You know,
I'm fighting it.
You said, Keith, where is the outrage? You know, I want to say, tell me, folks, how does it feel to be called unpatriotic when you put your family, your fellow American citizens, and your country first, and you don't believe the lies? Tell me truly, how does it feel? I'm sure none of your listeners were dancing on a rooftop in Weehawken in New Jersey when the Twin Towers went down. You know, I'm surprised that the American citizen doesn't wake up to what is going on and see how they're being bamboozled.
Well, Chance, I'll say this, Chance. You know, what used to piss kids off, namely, when someone elderly used to say, in my day, you know, there's much wisdom at the foot of an elderly man. However, I used to sit and listen to my grandpa Mickey talk to me about how the Great Depression was. And when I saw this coming, I prepared for this. We have quite a bit of food to live on. So, and I'm disabled, live on Social Security and stuff like that. But, you know, I know what austerity is. Not government imposed, but it's self-imposed. Now, Americans are seeing this as their stores are raided and stuff, and they having to fight for toilet paper and stuff, you know. But, you know, people need to look at trends. And, I mean, we saw it happen in 29 with the banking collapse, what those our ancestors lived through. And we had good times. And, of course, that's why we today, like myself, look at my children, my grandchildren, and want something of at least somewhat of a life that I had, which was good.
Of course.
And let them have it.
Yes. And you know, what amazes me, how so many American citizens can be cowered into this guilt when all they care about, most of your listeners, like I said, your family, your fellow American citizens, your country, this is what we care about. And to allow yourself to be pigeonholed into that category and feel guilt, I just can't understand. Like you said, where is the outrage? We've been lied to enough. We cannot let this go on anymore. We cannot be ashamed of how we feel. We put our main priorities first. And, you know, it breaks my heart that people can be so coerced into believing this. Remember, they set up all these, you know, if this country really cared, why would they set up mental deficiency into these terrorist plots? That should give people an inkling of how corrupt this is. If you're looking for a true terrorist, you don't need to set up a mental deficient and say, hey, look, we caught a terrorist. You see what I'm saying, Keith? This is, you know, it's so heartbreaking and sad that it amazes me that people don't see this and say, hey, what's going on here?
We're at another agenda here, too, there, Chance, because it's like John Pilger's video, The War You Didn't See. When you watch an Iraqi woman holding the limp bodies of their children from after a U.S. hellfire missiles, you know, and realize that these wars are all based on total lies. And then in that video, you watch the rows and rows and rows of graves and the description of a man holding two children with a watch in his hand. You know, this is all done in your name.
See, and the problem with American people, Keith, is, you know, I guess they figure it can't happen to me. It can't happen to my mother. It can't happen to my sister holding her little baby. This is a crying shame. I'm sorry. It's It's hard to take. It's very hard to take. Keith, thank you for letting me say my piece now. God bless you,
right,
my friend.
Chance, it's always good to hear you. I'm glad you called in, okay? Thank you. Tom, I'll take your call here in Utah there, and then I'll go to our break right after this, okay? Good evening, Tom.
All right. All right.
Go ahead, Tom. You're on the air.
Oh, I thought you said you were going to take me on a break.
No, I said I'll take you till the break.
Oh, okay. Well, just briefly, I don't know if you heard me earlier today with Kelso, but I got a pretty good little discussion in on this alleged epidemic. The sad thing is they talk about quarantining the people, but they don't talk about quarantining the real vectors, and that's the birds and the fish and everything that moves around with absolute freedom.
Uh-huh.
And then we are idiots. We bring their cadavers into our kitchen and operate on them as a stupid physician, and then wonder why we end up ill or our children. The only thing I just wanted to say is if people have any questions, they can call me, and I can take them through my lifetime of experience in this field.
Yeah, right now, Tom, right now there's an article on Zero Hedge that says, as Dr. Fauci says, that he's opened a national shutdown and warns that domestic travel ban not out of the question. I mean, they are pushing this to the hilt. We've already heard about the FEMA-type camps, the internment camps, and, of course, it'll all be rationalized, the constant demonization of the Chinese. And, of course, what usually brings the U.S. out of any kind of a economic situation is what? War. And I would advise everyone out here to go watch John Pilger's The Coming War on China and see exactly how this has been transpiring.
Well, it frustrates me. You know, when you work in that field, both in the field and the laboratory, and then you hear this nonsense about quarantining people. People are not the primary vectors. In fact, I ended up with a little case myself 2 weeks ago. I went out, went to a restaurant, and since I was assaulted and blinded in D.C., I couldn't see exactly what the preparer was doing. She didn't cough on me. She didn't touch me. She didn't violate her food handler's permit. She wore gloves, but the problem was that she put her hand in the wrong bin, and in that process she did dope me with a good supply of bacteria which carry these viruses. See, the viruses, they can't ride on anywhere on their own. They have to be vectored with a bacteria, and the bacteria has to be vectored in the tissue which it generally flourishes and originates and travels in.
This is why I haven't been here for the last 2 weeks. I went in for a CT scan to find out how these doctors screwed me up 3 years ago. And from that CT scan, they says, oh, well, I have an acute appendicitis. And, of course, then they admitted me because my blood count was wrong and blah, 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 blah. And from that, they start feeding me all these antibiotics and stuff. And then so after I come home, after my blood level count could drop back down, then my daughter and my granddaughter, who is in our school system, was sick with a cold like that, and I got it. And with that lowered immune system from all the antibiotics, I have been down like a dog with this flu thing that is going around, you know.
Well, you probably got it like I got it, not from the girl, yeah, but from the common food supply, particularly the slaughterhouse, the dairy. Dairy is the most pernicious vector for infection that we know of. So I'm waiting to hear them say, well, we better quarantine the animal products. And by the way,
well, it's the same thing when you look at all these field, Tom, it's the same when you look at the field workers all down through California, these immigrants and stuff, that don't have portable potties and they crap in the fields and you get all your E. coli and stuff.
Well, that E. coli in the field dies in the sunlight and oxygen. It has to be literally transferred to you through blood or tissue to tissue. That's the reality. But they never say a word about that on the news. So if you want to avoid, it's like if you want to avoid the bullet in the forehead, don't raise your head above the burn. But we do that all the time because we've never been educated that we need to follow protocol in the kitchen like we were following protocol in surgery. Anyway, yeah,
well, I
would.
All right, thanks. I appreciate it. I just wish Gordon Ramsay was into politics and he could walk through our Congress and White House. That's all I can tell you. Anyway, my bestie there. I got a break coming up here shortly here. I should have anyway. And then I'll be taking Mike in Kentucky here. And then David in Nevada, you're up there close. So I'll make sure that Mike doesn't talk too long. So with that, we'll be right back. Hang on. And here is the music to listen to.
If you want a lover, I'll do anything you ask me to. And if you want another kind of love, I'll wear a mask for you. If you want a partner, take my hand. Or if you want to strike me down.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
How healthy are your arteries? Deteriorating circulation has a number of early warning signs. High cholesterol, high blood pressure, fingers and or toes often go cold, arms and or legs often go to sleep, sharp diagonal crease in the earlobe, short walks cause cramping or pains in legs, memory is not as good as it used to be, ankles swell late in the day, chest pain after physical exercise or emotional stress. If you experience even one of these symptoms, your circulatory system is crying out for attention. Extendivite is a natural solution to help improve your overall health. Extendivite is not your average heart tonic. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or find us on Amazon.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed the newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
The newspaper? Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, a majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper does not give out the important attention on what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
All right, and Kenneth, can you go kill the music there? I'll go ahead and take Mike in Kentucky here, okay? And I'll try to get Dave in here. So, Mike in Kentucky, go ahead, please.
Can you hear me? There we go. I'm on now. I know you used to gravitate more toward the shortwave and ham radio type issues, but I just wondered what your sentiment is, for what it's worth. I mean, you know, my two cents is probably considered uncognizable by the courts or certainly by the agencies that are hijacked by the telephone industry. But what I'm getting at is, I think it was in the 50s during the height of the Cold War. This was up for years on the PowerHour.com. They had cited a section of the United States Code that allowed for broadcasters to not even worry about a license during periods of national emergency when they're broadcasting about the emergency that's going on. And we're under something like 34, counting the one that Trump issued on December 21st of 2017. You issued the one about human trafficking and seizing the assets of those involved in human trafficking and fundraising, organized crime.
Well, if that was true, they'd go after all these banks, especially the one down in Australia that just got zapped for doing, $20 million each.
That's what I'm getting at, though. I mean, we're under these executive orders, and they revised the code back in the 1980s for provisions for the Federal Communications Commissions to
So I get Dave in here, I'll say this. We as amateurs, many of us are fire department and stuff like that, and we all have access to our local sheriff's repeaters and stuff like that. All the radios now are basically built up so we can talk into the sheriff's offices. So the problem that you do see is like down in California where they're taking ham radios off of mountains, repeaters and stuff like that. And I think this is another power grab so that amateurs who can facilitate the communication is to where they only want what the state says.
Well, I'm talking about where you use the commercial bands like FM or even television where there's no interference with any existing broadcasters, but you're broadcasting information to a community that does not have a station doing that.
Well, I think you'll find more of that, Mike, in these pirate radio stations that are doing more of that, and there are a lot.
Yeah, but they're not really pirate. They're not really pirate.
Yeah, but they're trying to outlaw certain limits on wattage and stuff like that, so that you can't reach out. But anyway, Mike, I appreciate you calling in. I'll pick up Dave real fast, okay? Dave, go ahead.
Hey, Keith, how you doing? I'm a little bit shocked at how. Maybe I'm not shocked, but I'm a little bit shocked at how the public is responding and how knee-jerk this reaction is. The grocery store shelves are empty, and I'm asking myself why. I'm just really... I think I'm starting to understand the power of the media as to... I was talking to Robert Raybould like last week about this, and this thing is really about mind control, this virus.
Okay. Yeah, all right, Dave. I'm going to run out of time here. So I'll tell you what, all I can tell you this is that I can only think of Ronald Reagan going, well, I'm from the government, I'm here to help. So, you know, this constant reliance on the government for everything like that, when people should have been prepping, like all my ham friends for years now, we knew this was coming because we communicate. And that's the problem with people's faces stuck in this damn social media to where they don't do anything. Dave, have a good evening there. And I appreciate you calling in, okay? Sorry to cut you off there, Sue, too. Anyway, thank all those in the chat room there, those listeners out here. And also Kenneth in the control room and David for his assistance there, too. So catch you next week. I should be up to par with everything going on. So we'll chat later. And have a good evening. And Robert's up next here with, Incendiary Radio. I hope I said that right this time. So good evening, everyone.
Of it all. In life and love, I've been a loser.
Standard media outlets, even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast.
Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.